Hello, everybody. Welcome to today's Daily Friend Show. I'm standing in for Nick Lorimer, who's still ill, unfortunately. Hopefully, he'll be back on Monday. I'm joined by Michael Morris from Cape Town and Harriman Pretorius from Pretoria. How's it, guys?
All good, thanks. Nice and sunny and spring-like here today. Not sure how it is up with you guys.
it's quite a nice day today, actually, yeah. So we'll get straight into it. So it seems there's been quite a lot of the GNU and the election results from May. It's changed the foundations of our politics in quite a lot of ways. We've seen that's happening in the Western Cape is that the Freedom Front Plus has started working with the ANC in Oudtshoorn, and I think another municipality escapes me where. But in Tierwater's Kloof, where good Patricia de Lille's party has been working with the PA and the ANC, they've now actually decided to support the DA and a small party, the Socialist Revolutionary Workers Party, which is actually a party that was started by NUMSA in that municipality. So it's also, I mean, as the saying goes, politics makes for strange bedfellows with this kind of hard left party deciding to work with the DA and good in Tierwater's Kloof. So, I think things have changed a bit. So, Harriman, I'll start with you. Do you think this is going to be like a kind of is this a long term thing, do you think? Or is just, and do you think the 2024 election was what the Americans like to call a realigning election? Or do you think we're reading a bit too much into what's happening at municipal level?
No, I think it was something of a realigning election, partly because before the GNU, the Freedom Front Plus and the DA couldn't really afford collaboration with the ANC at the risk of allowing the other to criticize them of being ANC enablers. But now that both are essentially ANC enablers or collaborators, however you want to see them, it has detoxified, I think, at least to some extent, collaboration with the ANC, allowing the Freedom Front Plus to pull off a move that I think a year ago would have been inconceivable for the party. Now, I think there are risks in what the Freedom Front Plus did. Coalition or collaboration with the ANC at national level is almost abstract. I mean, it has a real consequence on the country as a whole. But when it comes to local government, it's about the very tangible, mundane, boring deliverables of, you know, roads without potholes, sidewalks, grass getting cut, waste removal, power, water, you know, the things that really affect the immediate day to day. So working with the ANC that doesn't necessarily have a stellar track record in delivering those tangibles might be a bit more of a risk than the Freedom Front Plus sort of estimated. But we'll see. And also on the Socialist Workers Revolutionary Party of Lenin and Marx or whatever the name is, it is telling that at a local government level, ideology has a limited footprint because it really is sort of a managerial approach. There is space for ideology. I mean, you stuff like insourcing or outsourcing or where service is bought, how it is provided, all of that. But strange bedfellows amidst the weird politics of the GNU, but also, I think, in the weird political setup of South African local government.
Michael, what do you make of this? Do you agree with Harriman that it is a realigning election and that ideology doesn't really matter that much at local government level?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly seems so. And you know, there is something peculiarly anachronistic in the name Socialist Revolutionary Workers' Party, isn't it? I mean, it's not only 1960s, it's kind of 1917 kind of feel to it. But I mean, it's in a way also quite a positive sign that at local government level you can have these individuals representing these apparently irreconcilable parties being able to sit down and talk about what they're going to do in their town. And Herman used the phrase day-to-day tangibles. I think that that's a very good one, very good way of putting it. Tertés Simmers, unusual name. I always have to double-check that I'm getting it right. The DA's Western Cape leader refers to stable citizens' centrist coalition governments. What we're talking about is doing things on the ground, working together in very practical ways, perhaps not having to worry too much about ideology or policy making at the more stratospheric levels of politics, but just focusing on, you know, things that need to be done, and agreeing on how to do that. So, I mean, I think that's a very positive thing. And then just generally, I think I also agree that you know, the 2024 election has been this a moment that has kind of loosened the logjam of so much of South African politics, where we were kind of set on a path, and it looked absolutely impossible that there was going to be any way of getting off that path or changing direction. And I think this election has helped to do that and introduced into people's minds. And you see it, one hears it in conversations, you see it in our politics, in local government coalition forming, this idea that, you know, anything is really possible now. All we need to do is actually just show that we can do it, and then we know that it's possible. And so it has introduced this kind of sense of dynamism, I think, into our politics, and even at a national level, slightly less so there, because obviously there's more at stake. But certainly, you know, down closest to where people are living, we see this amazingly dynamic process taking place with people who you would have thought were, you know, unthinkable partners are finding common ground. So yeah, very interesting moment we're at.
Well, I think it's also worth mentioning Johannesburg, because as it stands, I believe that Action SA is going to be supporting the ANC in electing a new mayor, Dado Morero. Two parties together have 135 seats out of the 270. So if they do work together, that's almost together, the two parties can almost govern Joburg by themselves. Yeah. They need one other small party just for the additional seats and whatever. But Herman, I know you are a very big fan of Herman Mashaba. So I'll ask you, do you think this is a good idea, or do you think Action SA is making a mistake, or do you think this is a good move by them?
Well, I think it is actually a good move by them. If there's one thing that seems to be emerging from looking at the last year of politics, and even the last month of politics, it is that voters want to see good decision making. And that good decision making doesn't necessarily need to be strictly ideological. It could just be prudent. And because South Africans aren't really terribly ideological creatures, as much as we at the IRI and the think tank and the political space might be, South Africans at the end of the day are quite pragmatic. They want things to work, and I think they might have an instinctive small C conservative classical liberal-ish bias. But if Action SA can show that they can govern with the same type of dynamism and prudence and sense of service and sense of purpose as I think Gayton McKenzie is governing, is showing in his role in the GNU, then there's no reason for them not to earn the political credit that I think they would deserve in providing Johannesburg with a stable government, because the ANC itself is a bit on a journey of self exploration. It is vulnerable. It is open to public pressures and public opinion, I think, more so than in the past. I don't think one should be naive in thinking, they've turned over a new leaf. But at least there seems to be another leaf somewhere, whether it's been turned over or not. And I think generally this is a good thing for politics, because having been on both sides of as it were, political tribalism within a political party, working very tribally to secure wins, and on the outside seeing sort of the bigger and perhaps easier picture, but the picture that perhaps ultimately matters more. There is something to be said for parties being vulnerable to pressures from their constituents. And a party like the DA might have long counted on the Freedom Front Plus and the ACDP as loyal DA collaborators. And I'm not saying this is necessarily the case, but the mere fact that there is now a new sort of pressure that the DA must perform and the Freedom Front Plus must perform, divorced from previous accepted loyalties, is an opportunity for the citizenry to have more say, to execute more, you know, decision-making power, as long as the parties realize that communication is about to get a whole lot tougher. It isn't anymore us against them, ANC versus non-ANC. It now really needs to step up to a place of our decisions, whether they are pro-ANC, anti-ANC, whatever, our decisions are making life better for our constituents, whether that's at a national or a local level or a provincial. Political communication has gotten tougher, and that means, I think, the voter has just gotten a lot more powerful.
Yeah, I think I agree. Yeah. And, I think we have seen that people think that political parties don't react to voting patterns in South Africa, but I think they do. I think we have seen, and maybe it's a bit slow and it takes a while for people to get used to it, but or for political parties to react to how people vote. But I think it does happen. And then just one other thing, it was mentioned yesterday by our colleagues in the podcast yesterday, but we did see Floyd Chivambu leaving for MK Party. And I'll ask you both, but I'll start with Michael. Do you think that is something that's significant, or do you think this is just kind of, you know, the people changing deck chairs on the Titanic, or do you think this does mean something for our politics that somebody like Floyd Chivambu, who I had one class with him when I was doing my MA adverts, and he's actually quite a nice guy. He's he's an intelligent guy. I mean, I disagree with his politics, but yeah, is he? Do you think he's going to make an impact at the MK Party, Michael? Or do you think this, like I said, you think he's just helping rearrange some of the deck chairs on the left, which, or on the Titanic, which is the South African left, could be coming Titanic and heading for, I don't know, neoliberal iceberg, perhaps?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to say. And I'm not really equipped, I don't think, to answer that question. I think Heron might have some interesting observations on that score, because I know he's been looking at it very closely. But the first thing that I thought about when I saw the initial sort of breaking news bulletins coming out saying, you know, something's about to happen in the EFF, and it looks as though, you know, senior leadership changes and so on. The first thing I thought of was the magnificent, probably tens of pages, in Simon Sebag Montefiore's book on Stalin and his last days, and the moment at which Stalin has a stroke, and there is suddenly a crisis in the party. He's still alive, but the instancia has gone, and it's this whole thing about, you know, a party that's beholden to a leadership that is defined by a personality and defined by that. That particular kind of ruthlessness that goes with that kind of power, and the minute that starts to break up, everybody's vulnerable. Nobody knows what to do. There's no dynamism in the party itself to deal with these kinds of issues. So I mean, that's the first thing that I thought. This is quite interesting for the EFF, I think, and for someone like Malema and lots of people who support them and admire them. Maybe, you know, they must be wondering what this all means to them, and to that particular brand of politics too, which is, I suppose from our point of view, this is quite a healthy thing to have some vulnerability built into a party that has always been something of a threat to our politics. Although, and again, harking back to Behrman's point about South Africans being largely non-ideological, pragmatic people, I often think they're the ones that are ahead and that parties are following on behind. there's always this notion of something that's unthinkable until suddenly it isn't unthinkable anymore. We've been through that before in this country. That's fantastic. So in this society, I've always felt, we're not really a revolutionary society, but nevertheless, I think the EFF and MK represent the potential for developing that kind of politics, and that is a worry. But as for what it really means, I don't really feel that I'm particularly equipped to answer that in detail, but Herman might have some interesting thoughts on that.
Yeah, go ahead, Herman. So, do you think this means anything, or like I said, it's just moving some deck chairs on the deck of the Titanic?
The problem with political capital, the thing that political parties try to earn and then spend by gaining trust, credibility, and then upsetting a few people, but upsetting not upsetting people more than you've won them over, sort of maintaining that bank balance of political capital is a weird thing because, to a very significant extent, it is perception. So the Titanic might become a self-fulfilling prophecy, where in British politics there's this rule that once a prime minister loses a chancellor, the Minister of Finance, they're on borrowed time. If you've lost the confidence, whether through resignation or through being fired, if you as a prime minister has lost your most powerful cabinet minister, the one responsible for signing the checks of government, then you're in crisis mode. Now, sometimes that's actually not true, but it's always perceived as such. Sometimes chancellors just want to resign and do something else, but it's always considered, especially in the British press, this idea of chancellor gone, prime minister clearly on life support. Clearly on life support, the end is near. And that's the risk that Malema now has with Floyd Chivambu, who was, in a very real way, Malema's chosen Minister of Finance, his sort of chancellor proxy. The fact that Chivambu, with his credibility, with his leadership of the party, with clearly, as you say, Marius, his intelligence, the fact that he would see it as a positive or a useful step, because I'm sure he's not taking a self-destructive step in his own mind, the fact that he could see it as a useful and constructive thing to do to leave the EFF will shake a lot of psychological assumptions, I think, in many of the EFF supporters, going, my goodness, if Chivambu isn't even in this project anymore, should I be as well? Because there's a wonderful quote from a PhD on the ANC's political marketing that says the political image of the party functions in effect as a values mirror. Individuals confer allegiance on a political party which most closely reflects an individual's sense of who and what they are. The more we see of ourselves in a party, the more likely we are to vote for it. And people don't want to vote for a party that is falling apart, where the deputy leader has lost faith in the party. They don't want to see themselves in an organization that is so racked with self-doubt that it is in this sort of crisis mode that clearly was painted all over Malema's face yesterday. So I do think it's a problem for the EFF, even if it is just a self-fulfilling prophecy of enough people think it's a problem, so it's a problem. Whether this is part of the broader realignment post-GNU is a bit of a wait and see game, because it might be the start of a natural MK-EFF merger or hostile takeover, or just drawing towards a point of almost zero distinction between the parties. It might be that. And ideologically speaking, it would make sense for the GNU to cohere on this side of the ideological spectrum, and the other parties on the other side will see benefit in the same sort of exercise in the opposition. But it is too early to tell. But if I were Julius Malema, I would be worried. In fact, the first thing that I thought when I heard, oh, big leadership announcement, I thought Malema was stepping down for Chivambu to take over, because that would make sense to me. The party didn't have a great election. Malema, goodness me, sorry, my inner Tony Leon just came about. Malema has been leader of the party for a decade. When a party goes backwards in an election, there should be some accountability. I thought Malema would have maturity and the political judgment to see that, you know, how about some renewal at the top? And when it turned out to be essentially the opposite, I thought, eesh, Malema is probably entering the last chapter of his political career where they lose touch. And as massive a fan of Margaret Thatcher as I am, I can't remember who said it, but all iron ladies start to rust. And I think Malema is starting to rust a bit.
I think I agree broadly with that, but I don't think Malema would give up the EFF. Julius Malema is the EFF and the EFF is Julius Malema. I think if he was hit by a bus tomorrow, that would be the end of the EFF. And also, I think 2026 is definitely something to look at. If MK party can hold on to its coherence and whatever you, up until the local government elections, I think it's got a good chance of winning at least some municipalities in KwaZulu-Natal. But obviously, if it carries on this infighting, then I think 2024 might have been at zenith. So I think, and also 2026, we'll have to see how the realignment goes. We might see, if MK party holds together, we might see EFF working with him in some municipalities. But yeah, that's 2 years is a long time in politics, but it's also quite a short time as well. So it's around the corner. There's also something our colleague spoke about yesterday, but I think it's worth asking the two of you what you think about this, because I think it's important. So there's this health compact that the president wanted people to come sign, and it's been part of all these kind of things where the government and business have been working together, you know, getting common goals together. And as I say, there was this health compact, but the Business Unity South Africa, as well as the South African Medical Association, decided not to sign it explicitly because of it supports NHI. So, Harriman, do you think, what do you think this means? Do you think, a lot of people are saying NHI is not going to happen. It's just something that the government keeps pushing and we shouldn't be concerned at all. But I think that's a bit naive. As long as the government's, the bill's been signed now, it's an NHI Act actually, and the government's been pushing for it, including Aaron Motsoaledi, who was kind of the midwife for this bill. So do you think we should ignore this? And what do you think this perhaps means for future government and business collaboration?
It sort of reminds me of something that a cricket coach said to me in my youthful days when I was desperately trying not to be a terrible batsman, is that... you missing a ball means you miss it completely. It doesn't touch the bat. But hitting the ball doesn't mean you hit it well. It can just nick the bat, you can mishit it, you can misdirect it. And just like that, the NHI cannot happen in a very clear way in the sense that it is repealed. But it can happen in a whole range of ways, in sort of minor or major or somewhere in between levels of implementation. Because the NHI is such a behemothic thing, it can both happen and not happen in ways that we're expecting it to do. So whatever the prognosis at the current state might be, it's by no means the end of NHI. There's a lot of damage that thing can still do. Jay once said there's possibly some work that could be done to fix some of the biggest errors within the bill. Now, I still think fundamentally the thing is flawed, but it's by no means dead. It is on the statute books. I mean, it is literally a signed law. It is only implementation away from being reality. It's gotten closer to reality than the constitutional amendment of Section 25 on property rights on expropriation without compensation ever got. So it is still alive. By no means, time of death cannot yet be called on the NHI and probably won't be able to be called for the next 5 years at least. It's a massive thing with so many moving parts that it's difficult to see, you know, exactly which parts of it are progressing or failing. That said, I do find a lot of encouragement from this sort of business and private sector and medical sector opposition to the NHI, to the social compact. We all know Ramaphosa is at heart a consensus seeker, not necessarily a consensus builder, that's someone different, but he is a consensus seeker, someone who wants to find the least possible offensive option for everyone involved. So this is a frustration, I think, to him and his presidency, that he had a compact, a social compact that was progressing and now has sort of fallen apart. And I think that's another symptom of the change that has been brought about by the GNU. Quite simply put, the ANC is no longer as formidable as it used to be. It's no longer difficult to say no to it as it used to be. Time was, if we look at the mining charter, if you said no to the ANC, you were done. You didn't have access. You didn't have the ear of anyone who made decisions on your sector. And this is a positive change, you know, more strength to civil society.
Michael, what do you think this will mean with regards to the GNU? Because obviously parties like the DA and the Freedom Front Plus that are in the GNU are opposed to the NHR. And it's not just, and well, obviously the ANC is pushing it, and it's not just the NHR, there's other things such as the bailout bill, EWC, or the expropriation bill is still kind of simmering along there. And it's not clear that the ANC completely against expropriation without compensation. Obviously, the DA and Different Plus are completely, oh yeah, exactly, public procurement as well, and things such as BE and all this kind of stuff. So, I mean, do you think this is, are these risks for the GNU, or is it something that they're going to kind of try sweep under the carpet for the next 5 years? Because as we were saying before the show, coalitions in general, historically, coalitions that have worked have been ones where there's some kind of ideological coherence between the partners. And there is, I think there's some coherence between the DA and the ANC, but there's also a lot of differences. And we'll have to see what comes out of this. So what do you think? Do you think these are going to be big roadblocks for the GNU, or it's something that can manage to work out?
I say, I mean, I'm an incorrigible optimist. So I tend to see things in a way that's perhaps slightly different from people who are incorrigibly pessimistic. So to me, I mean, I think it's, you know, it reflects, I think what Emma was hinting at as well, it reflects this idea that I think people are quite energized about new opportunities, a new environment in which we're talking about crucial things. And a sense that, you know, now is the time to bring the influence to bear, to alter policy, to, you know, make these things debatable and arguable. And, you know, let's look at getting an outcome that is actually going to suit us as a people, as a society. I think it's quite useful in the sense that it's not so much a sort of ideological wedge that's been driven into the NHI bill. It's people who are at the coalface of medicine who, you know, just by definition have, you know, given their lives to helping people who are sick and injured and so on and needing care. The South African Health Professions Council, which is the body that has newly joined the opposition to the South African Medical Association, one of them, but South African Health Professionals Council incorporates SAMA, Private Practitioners Forum, Federation of Surgeons, Dental Association, Society of Anesthetologists, Unity Forum of Family Practitioners, and the Orthopedic Association, and various others. So 25,000 people. So that's a huge number of people who are not necessarily part of some kind of ideological bloc. They are professionals in the field, and they want to see healthcare, better healthcare. They're probably, a lot of them are in favor of the idea of some kind of universal healthcare coverage. We have a very substantial public health sector, but it's just very badly managed, badly run. It's riven with all kinds of problems. I'm sure a lot of those people who are involved in those associations and those fields of medicine want to see public hospitals and clinics run well, serving people properly, and so on. So to me, it's a very positive thing. And I think potentially they're saying, look, we're not going to sign this so long as NHI is the thing that you want us to approve and to give a nod to, but we're going to participate on the basis that we want to see very considerable improvements in the way healthcare is managed, and we want to see people at the end of the day being better off, better cared for, and so on. So I think it's, to my mind, And this is maybe an optimistic take on it. It is a positive thing, and it makes the politics dynamic. The ANC is not in a position now, simply as you were saying earlier about the mining charter that were, was either you or Herman. It doesn't. The ANC is not in a position now to say, well, we're simply going to reject the Health Professionals Council as non-players because we can. They can't anymore. They've got to try and find some kind of solution.
Exactly. And I think that's where it comes to that 29th May was a bit of a realigning election where that broke the power of the ANC. And now people, like you said, Herman, people don't have to be in this kind of ANC universe anymore. They can say no to the ANC. It's not this, it's obviously still by far the biggest political party in South Africa, and it probably will be for a long time, but it's not this massive juggernaut that it was for the past 30 years. And now it's possible to say bye to it. Not bye to it, say no to it. So we are at the end of the show. I don't know if you guys have any words of encouragement for the Springboks and Dricus du Plessis in Perth tomorrow. And if you want to say good luck to the guys or.
Yeah,
I in fact, I just got off the phone to Rossi. He phoned me for a few ideas. So I'll keep it between us. I'll keep it between us. I'll respect
cool.
his privacy.
We'll see if you see any new moves tomorrow. Then I'll know that was advice that Rossi got from Harriman. So we'll know.
If
So,
they were,
but
if they didn't,
yeah, exactly.
it was his fault.
Exactly. Okay, but yeah, thanks, guys. Have a good weekend and enjoy the rugby, cricket, and UFC tomorrow. And to everybody who watched and listened, thank you very much, and we'll see you on Monday.